just using it to represent the ratio of a circle's circumference to its diameter. I hope we're all clear now. I'm expecting another bumper mailbag after What's Next. Back in the 70s, 80s, I'm not entirely sure, one of the many brands of aspirin had the slogan,
"Nothing works faster than anodyne."
Leading to the almost compulsory rejoinder, "So, take nothing," which, funnily enough, isn't that far from what a homeopathic practitioner might recommend. A core concept of homeopathy being that solutions with active ingredients diluted to the point of nothingness can have positive and opposite effects to far more concentrated ones. Less is more. Well, more or less. It's, to say the least, or most, somewhat counterintuitive, and has fed into the continued derision heaped on homeopathy and its practitioners.
As I understand it, the claim is that the less you use homeopathy, the better it works. Sounds plausible to me.
That's from a recent weblog by Oxford physics professor David Deutsch, one of our big thinkers about multiple universes and quantum realities, but not a medical doctor. So, what does he know? It's exactly 200 years since the term homeopathy first appeared in print, and it's never been bigger. In the UK alone, countless thousands will testify to its curative powers. There are 5 NHS homeopathic hospitals, and it's taught on dozens of different UK degree courses. Science courses. It may have taken 2 centuries, but isn't it finally time to accept that homeopathy works? Not according to David Cahoon at the Department of Pharmacology at University College London. In this week's edition of Nature, he argues homeopathy and much of the whole field of complementary and alternative medicine, CAM, aren't merely not science, they're anti-science, and therefore that offering science degrees in these subjects is, and I quote, plain dishonest. David Cahoon joins me, as does Professor David Peters, Clinical Director of Westminster University's School of Integrated Health, which claims to offer the widest range of complementary therapy courses in Europe, including a BSc Health Science degrees in homeopathy. Now, you're both David, so I have to be terribly formal and call you by your full names, and also, I think, rather than trying to take on the whole field of CAMs and which CAM is a scam and which isn't, we're going to focus, I hope, as much as we can on homeopathy. So David Cahoon, let's just be clear. Are you just saying homeopathy plain just doesn't work?
I'm saying yes, quite. I mean, there's very little evidence that it works. The curious thing is that if you look at the National Electronic Library of Complementary Medicine, they have 38 entries on homeopathy. Not a single one of them says that there's good evidence for it working. This is just looking at it empirically, not from the sort of balmy view of the pills containing nothing. Forget that for the moment and just look at the empirical data. But yet, if you challenge a homeopath, yeah, they will say, but there's lots of evidence that it works. Well, this seems to be very contradictory to me. And in fact, it's the complementary medicine people who compile this library. It's not compiled by skeptics. It's compiled by, David Peters, among others.
So you're saying that if I, say, have a pain in my back and my doctor doesn't do much about it and I go and see a homeopath and they prescribe me a course of treatment and a bit later I feel better, that's nothing to do with having gone to see the homeopath?
That seems entirely plausible, unless it's a placebo effect. It's a bit like, echinacea makes your cold better in 7 days when otherwise it would have taken a week. There's 2 ways it can happen. One's a real psychosomatic placebo effect. The other is it just got better anyway.
But this is the point I'm trying to get to. I mean, we talk about the placebo effect as if it's nothing, but a placebo effect can actually be a very good effect, and homeopathy can be possibly a very good way to bring about that effect.
Yes, I've got nothing against placebos as long as they're honest. What I've got something against is the pseudoscientific mumbo-jumbo that surrounds these placebos. It seems to me that rather than after 200 years, if they can't produce anything, then it's time to forget it. We could usefully put some money into investigating how to produce placebo effects without excessive dishonesty. That would be a worthwhile.
I mean,
nothing wrong with them.
David Peters, this is an interesting area, because even if we take the efficacy of what's actually in any homeopathic pill or potion out of the equation, if we accept that there are placebo effects and they can be quite strong, and one of the things that helps the placebo effect is all concerned, or at least the patient, have to believe in it, isn't homeopathy a very good way of bringing that about, even before you bring the rest into the equation? And if you start saying, it doesn't work, then you lose the effect. So we need some form of medicine like this, whether it's homeopathy or something else.
So we need good placebos, you're saying?
I'm saying if we accept that placebos have an effect,
okay,
and that homeopathy, going to see somebody who treats you seriously, looks after you and gives you a pill that probably has no side effects, what's wrong with it, independently of any possible medical benefits, if that actually helps the patient?
I'm not going to go there, because that's very convoluted philosophy and ethics for me, but I will say that if the placebo effect weren't so strong, we wouldn't have had to have randomised control trials to weed it out all the studies of drugs. So obviously something major is going on any time a doctor believes in something and a patient believes in something. Now, but the other piece of thing of evidence I would say is that David says there's no evidence in favour of homeopathy being more than a placebo. And actually, quite a few of the reviews on the NELCAM database would say exactly that's not so, that there is something that says homeopathy in some situations is better than a placebo. I mean, it's not just that. One of the problems for people who are interested in homeopathy like me and whether it can be studied as a science is that there are animal studies that seem to suggest it works. Prophylaxis of infections in intensively farmed pigs, toxicological studies of arsenicum. When you give animals small doses of arsenic, they get rid of poisonous arsenic more quickly. So there is evidence that something's going on.
But if there is all this evidence, how come James Randi's $1 million prize for anyone who can convince him that homeopathy works is still unclaimed?
The problem is it's too big a question. Does homeopathy work? You might as well say, you know, does conventional medicine work?
I don't think anybody would be offering a prize for that.
Well, if you look on the B&J Clinical Evidence website, that says, well, about 15% of what we do has got some evidence for it. The jury's out in all kinds of areas of medical practice. The problem for practitioners like me, who began to get interested about 30 years ago in homeopathy, is that despite its implausibility, something seems to be going on. And maybe it is some sort of advanced placebo effect, and we need research to find out. We need more research, not less. David would say we should stop researching homeopathy. We need more, and not only that, but another thing we started doing about 20 years ago, Patrick Petroni and I, was working alongside, as doctors, with complementary therapists. And 20 years ago, it was very difficult to work alongside complementary therapists as a doctor. We were like two different cultures. Our longitudinal study, just to touch in on what Michael has said, is for 20 years trying to create the beginnings of a robust research culture in the complementary therapy world. And we're getting there, and Westminster is very much part of the picture.
So, Michael, since you were just name-checked there, would a good longitudinal study resolve this once and for all?
Well, I think with most interventions, as distinct from a lot of the other things we study, you do need proper trials. Whereas our observational studies, there are lots of things where you can't do proper trials. But I would say with an intervention where you're actually treating patients, you need proper trials with proper comparison groups. Now, for example, a colleague of mine, Chandra Patel, many years ago, did randomized control trials of relaxation-based meditation and showed an effect on blood pressure, a good effect, lowering blood pressure. So I'm very open-minded about these complementary therapies, but you need proper evaluation.
David Cahoon, I think we may have accidentally stumbled on some possible common ground here. I mean, as the other David Peters was saying, maybe it is some kind of advanced placebo effect. It needs further research. Would you be against that, or is this so anti-science that we must distance ourselves from it altogether?
Some of it is placebo effect. Some of it is spontaneous remission. That's a very interesting question, which I would very much like to know more about, because we most of the time you simply don't know. But apart from that, what's being proposed, that what we need, as Michael just said, is proper trials. After the House of Lords report on all this in 2000, which was pretty wimpy, but it came out with a clear conclusion that the first priority was to show that it's better than placebo. The Department of Health gave £1 million or so, not a huge amount by the standards of these things, but not trivial either, to do the extra research, which was what was thought to be needed. The money was put in charge of a committee which consisted largely of expert homeopaths, CAM people, who immediately allocated it to things which didn't show whether it's better than placebo or not. And this is usually what happens. As far as I can see, looking down the website of your department, nobody's trying to do randomised controlled trials. They do things like reflective practice and pragmatic trials and things which don't give you the answer you want.
Is what one of the things you're most concerned about, and this is taught as a science, if this was taught, not if you weren't getting a BSc in it, would you feel a lot more comfortable with it?
If it's vocational, no, because you can't have a vocation which is based on a nonsense. I mean, you know, we measure the effect, the relationship between effect and concentration all the time as a pharmacologist. Generally, the bigger the concentration, the bigger the effect. Not unreasonable. Dose response curves have a positive slope. I've never seen a dose response curve with a negative slope, not over its whole distance anyway. And neither homeopaths ever produced one. They had this bizarre claim that the less you give, the bigger the effect you have. But they have never produced a concentration response curve that behaves in that manner.
But doesn't
after
that just
200 years?
But doesn't just that put it into that strange category of parascience, which is a permeable barrier between that and science? Things have gone back and forth down the decades between the two. Yes, it may well be there is absolutely no science to homeopathy, but just because at the moment it runs counter to our thinking doesn't mean there can't be.
Yes, and I think that's a really important point. Something seems to be going on clinically, and if as a practitioner you see something going on clinically and you're curious about it, but it takes an awful long time to answer the questions. I don't think it's an advanced placebo effect unless we redefine what placebo is, and yes, it's very, very powerful.
And finally, David Cahoon, what would you like to see happening as a result of all this? I mean, in an ideal world?
I would like to see universities behaving more honestly. I mean, I would like to have seen the Vice-Chancellor of Westminster University opposite me here to ask what he thinks he's doing. I think it's very popular, it gets bums on seats, that gets income to the university. But I think if universities can't behave honestly, who the hell can do?
We have to answer that. We teach it as a science degree with at least a third of good medical science content. We teach about practitioner development, we teach about health sciences, we teach about homeopathy, we teach about critical practice, and we teach about critically being aware of research and how to do the methodological studies that are needed. So we are a science degree, and it's a solid foundation for a critical and integrated group of practitioners.
Okay, Professor David Peters, David Cahoon, many thanks. I sort of had a feeling Complete Accord wasn't going to be on the cards, but perhaps a reasonable compromise is to finish with this from James Randi, that's the one who offered the $1 million, who said this about evidence for homeopathy's effects.
I won't expect that homeopathy will ever be established as a legitimate form of treatment, but I do expect that it'll continue to be popular.
Next week, as we've been telling you all through today's programme, but at barely audible levels and frequencies, subliminal advertising. We'll look at new research and whether messages can be received without being perceived. And we'll also see why civil engineers are improving their hip-to-waist ratio by building houses out of rubbish.
Material World was presented by Quentin Cooper and produced by Roland Pease. This year marks the 30th anniversary of the television series Roots, the dramatisation of Alex Haley's novel about African slaves in America. As part of Radio 4's commemoration of the bicentenary of the Slave Trade Abolition Act, the actor and playwright Kwame Kwe Amar looks at the initial impact and lasting legacy of Roots. He hears from British and American viewers about how they were deeply affected by the portrayal of slavery.
You couldn't tear yourself away from the television, but simultaneously you couldn't help but be extraordinarily moved by it. There hasn't been anything before or since, I think, like it in the history of American television. It was truly unique.
Roots, on Saturday morning at 10:30. Well, now here on BBC Radio 4, we're about to join Eddie Mayer for PM. It's 5 o'clock.
A new international deal on aviation is cleared for takeoff. But is it America that's at the controls?
This agreement opens the skies of Europe to...